Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to City Alpha 3, one of the Nerd Party's Star Trek podcast. I'm Philip Gilfus, your host. I'm joined, as always, by Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. Gentlemen, how are the D&Ds going this week?
Ooh, that's good.
We've never been called that before, so that's new.
That is new. good. It's a little warm out here in California. I feel like that's a universal statement, but it's been nice. Been a nice, relaxing weekend.
Awesome. Daniel, how goes things that might be watching on TV?
It goes pretty good. Hey, I watched a whole movie this week. You can't...
What movie was that?
Oh, I watched Star Trek Beyond.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's Star Trek related.
Indeed.
Like someone forced you to do that or anything.
No, of course not.
Yeah. No, we're still... I mean, again, not Star Trek related, but wife and I are still making our way through Orphan Black. We're on disc two, I think. I don't know what episode we're on, but just, you know, one episode left on disc two. Maybe the... I don't know how long the season is, but it's certainly a good thriller series for people who like a show that's a couple years old, who, if you've never seen it, but it's very interesting and good. Any other shows or movies or books or comics y'all are engrossed with? I know you're building things, Darren.
Yes, this was a building weekend. I had some friends over on Saturday, and we're building a Death Star control panel kind of like display. So you could use it for photo ops, but it's also designed so I can park and dock my K2SO puppet. So when I'm not walking around with him, he can stand and look cool and still be available for photo ops. So yeah, lots of math, lots of cutting, wood cutting math.
I suppose I had a tangentially Star Trek thing happen to me just about 10 minutes ago. I've in a book club, and which I think I'll talk about before, but I finished reading The Night Circus. Very interesting read. I do recommend it if you're consider yourself a book reader, because it's not a book I would naturally go to, but it's, if you know, I don't know how to describe it other than it's sort of this, it's sort of not a standard narrative book. The Night Circus, it's a lot about magic and circus, obviously it's in the name. It's very capital R romantic, but it's sort of, there's sort of two different timelines, and it's also like present tense and second person, and it's this almost experiential book. But anyway, all that to say, I finished it up and posted my review on Goodreads, as I want to do, and I saw I got a like for my review, which is always, you know, good, right? Social media. And I looked to see who the like was, and it was Anthony, as in Anthony Rapp of Star Trek Discovery. So he's on Goodreads, and he's a big sci-fi fantasy. I mean, he's a bit of a, you know, as far as his reading, very nerdish. So if you're into sci-fi fantasy books, the Anthony Rapp on Goodreads is someone to follow. So
very cool.
Yeah. So this week, as Daniel alluded to, we are going to be talking about Star Trek Beyond. You know, we have so many Star Trek things happening. I know Daniel and I mentioned that Star Trek Beyond, we've seen it once. Daniel, I assume it was in the theater for you, right? Or was it on the small screen?
Yep, no, it was I watched it in the theater, yep.
Okay. And then, Darren, how many times have you seen Beyond, or STB?
I think I saw it twice in theaters, and I probably watched it maybe three, maybe four times, including this week. Spoiler alert, but I do enjoy it, so.
Okay. Cool, yeah. No, because it had been, I said before, but I'll repeat myself. You know, I saw it in the theaters, you know, not necessarily a huge fan of the Kelvinverse, JJ-verse, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I'm not someone who, like, dismisses it and hates it or all that one. It's just usually not my cup of tea. But always interested to see what people do with Star Trek. And so I saw it in the theater, and I was like, oh, you know, after that Into Darkness taste in your mouth, it was a nice palate cleanser. You know, it's largely inoffensive. I had my sort of one or two or three little niggling points, but I was like, on the whole, okay, that was a nice, interesting Star Trek ride. I will leave it be and never talk it about again, because I'm sure if I watch it again, I'll just go like 2009 and Into Darkness, where I have like, this is all the things that annoy me. But I watched it again because I thought, like, why not revisit it? And so let's begin. So Darren, you brought it up. So largely speaking, without going into those niggling details just yet. What is your thoughts on Star Trek Beyond?
I really like it. It feels, I think, the most like a TOS episode where we get, you know, I mean, at a movie scale, you know, and we have a really good story. We have a lot of really engaging characters. I like how it starts, you know, where it's kind of leading into, you know, it's year three of our 5-year mission. It's feeling really episodic, quote unquote. I mean, there's lots of winks at the camera for sure. But overall, it's a good story. And I like how it's growing Kirk, but not in a patronizing way. I mean, because his overall kind of arc in this movie is, you know, him wanting to kind of move off to the Admiralty and not be a starship captain anymore. And I think it's less angsty than, like, Into Darkness, where he's like, you don't have an ounce of respect in your whole humility body, and you're going to get your whole ship killed. And it's, you know, it's like, okay, we can have our characters grow without the lecture, you know. And it feels like he's matured, you know, Kirk has matured enough to be that captain now, instead of like that hot shot, you know. I mean, he says like, oh, I joined Starfleet, you know, on a dare, instead of like my father who joined, you know, to do something. And Bones is kind of like, yeah, but you have proved that, you know, you need to kind of don't beat up the one named Kirk, you know. It's basically what he's saying. Mm. But yeah, so overall, I really liked this movie, and the, you know, kind of like what we had said a little offline, like it has pretty good plot. You know, there's not a bunch of tiny, it doesn't feel like there's some huge hole or something that's super convenient, but is it, you know, a perfect movie? I don't know. I mean, but it definitely ranks up there for the Kelvinverse for me.
Right. And then Daniel, I know you're a big 2009er, but what do you think of Star Trek Beyond on this sophomore outing?
So, yeah, I was like you, Philip. I was a little nervous to come back to it because I did have a good time the first time I watched it, but I felt like there was a lot of little things that bothered me, maybe. And I think I discovered a few new things that bothered me, but I also found a bunch of new things to appreciate as well. So I think, especially in terms of like the Kelvinverse, and we'll get into it, I'm sure, but it's easy for me because I do love 09 like crazy. And very much dislike Into Darkness. I think this one's more of a mixed bag. I do think it's good overall. I think because this one, especially more than even probably more than 09, it's just committed to being a good time and just having fun. I think that really helps a lot, and it really smooths over some of the rougher edges we'll talk about, like with plot and stuff. But I even the second time, like I said, I was nervous that I would. Everything would be exposed and I would just be like rolling my eyes the whole time, but I just still laughed a lot and I had a really good time watching it. I just, even when I was like, ugh, that's kind of stupid and that's kind of silly, you know, especially after Into Darkness, it's so much better than Into Darkness that it's really refreshing to watch.
That's a good point. Like, coming after Star Trek Into Darkness, it's like, well, there's only one way to go. And that's up.
Yeah.
And I like what you said too, Daniel, about the humor. I didn't mention that, but you're right. Like, I think they hit the humor really well. Like, Scotty's really funny. I mean, Simon Pegg, you know, co-wrote the script, so not a surprise there. But still, like, there's a lot, you know, it was also the first time I've watched this since, you know, just reminding of, like, that, you know, Chekhov, you know, had passed. And, you know, but he's really good in it as well.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Just lots of good humor.
Yeah, and much echoing everyone else. You know, like, so I was taking notes during the movie, you know, as one does when you do a podcast. But I stopped about halfway through, you know, because like I said, I had some niggling points with this one. But like I said, nothing, I was telling you offline, that, you know, with 09 and Into Darkness, there's a lot of times where I'll watch those movies and there's bits I like, but then there'll be like whole scenes where I'm just like, oh, you, this is why I don't like to watch these movies. Cause like, it's like this scene or this, oh, but there's no scene in Beyond other than like the ship blowing up. Cause I'm not really a fan of, you know, the JJ blowing the ship up or the ship being attacked. It only blows up in this one. But anyway, until like the massive death, but beyond that, if you will, beyond that, you know, there's no thing that really troubles me about this movie, which I know seems like faint praise, but then let me raise the stakes. I stopped taking movies because I was enjoying it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is great, you know, lots of good stuff happening. And so, as a reminder, this came out 22 July of 2016, and I'm not a behind-the-scenes productions person, but we all lived during the time we remember that it seemed to me, because without doing any research, so this will probably just be me talking about why whatever, like, we all knew there was going to be a third movie, right? That was like, okay, we did Into Darkness, whatever you think, there's going to be a third Kelvinverse movie. But then, like, we knew the date it would come out, but then, like, it seemed when, you know, no one bothered to do, like, maybe we should write a script or something and then, like, produce it and maybe film it. And, like, the date was approaching and then, you know, there's behind-the-scenes drama, whatever it was. And Simon and his writing partner, whose name I can't remember, were sort of like a late addition of, like, we'll write the script, okay? You know? And then it seemed like maybe some troubled production history. But it's one of those things, like, you know, if you don't know about that, you'll watch the film and you'll like it. But just sort of as the background. But, of course, from a unique perspective, and again, I don't have the research in front of me, but this, you know, both Nine and Into Darkness were the same writing team, right? They were both Alex and...
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But if you take out... I think Simon Pegg's influence can't be understated here.
No, yeah.
It's very clear, unlike anything that Kurtzman kind of deals with, that there's a lot of love and respect for TOS. Like, and I think that really shows through, and that's part of the reason that that's so much fun, that there's a lot going on here to like. And the... I don't want to jump too far ahead or anything, but I was just like, the music, like when Kirk was fighting, like the music was so TOS-y. I was like, oh man, this is great. This is him just, you know, double fist punching Gorn people in the back and stuff. This is great. But I think, I do think that there was a lot of turmoil, if memory serves me, with the behind the scenes stuff in Beyond. Because I remember there being a lot of... switches from scripts. There was somebody else who had written a script and it didn't work or whatever. But I think it kind of worked out in the end.
It seemed to me, and again, this, you know, there we have movie experts on the network that's not the three of us, but like, to me, this seems the most arm's length Bad Robot production of the three, where, you know, JJ was very involved in 09, and then maybe, you know, and I'm not, you know, saying JJ Abrams personally, you know, laying any blame on him, but this seems to be like, you know, with Justin Lin in the director's chair, you know, who has his own legacy with Fast and Furious and everything else. And then Simon Pegg and his writing partner doing the script. It's sort of, it's, you know, a unique entry in the trilogy of the Kelvinverse.
Well, JJ was very busy Benedicting Star Trek at this point, because this was right around the time, I think, that he was doing Force Awakens. So I think that's kind of where all that sort of stuff came from. I think there was a big, like you said, Philip, there was this date in mind. Hey, we're going to do this third Star Trek movie, and then Star Wars came to JJ, and he's, you know, of course, that's what he was chasing his whole life. So, that's what happened, I think.
But let's split into let's focus in on the characters, because I think that's certainly what this story is mainly about. I mean, there's a plot, but I think, in my opinion, and you can disagree, the other two movies are more plot, and this one's more character, in my opinion. But anyway, so let's go in focus. So Kirk, Darren, you brought up James T. Kirk, or James T., as Jayla calls him.
James T.
Yeah.
Fix my house.
So, you know, he's having existential ennui in the beginning of this movie. What do you think about his journey that you touched on?
I think he, you know, yeah, like I said, he's going through, you know, a little bit of that burnout. It kind of makes me think of Pike in the Cage, where he's kind of having that same burnout. You know, what am I doing? And we get the same bartender. Actually, it's very similar now that I think about it. Like, the bartender with McCoy and the scotch. And it's just, it's like, it's the little things. Like, it's...
Also, can I just say because I remember the scene, but I don't remember this line, and it did crack me up probably more than it should, that they raided Chekhov's locker.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. And they're like, I thought he was a bourbon. Yeah,
vodka guy. Right. Guy.
Yeah, vodka guy. Yeah. I mean, I love, and that's like a natural joke where it's like it adds so much character to these characters because it comes off as genuine. It doesn't have to be a funny joke. It's just, you can tell that that's something that these two friends, you know, they're at the top of the command structure, you know, they're kind of able to relate to each other. And, you have that.
Well, that joke, I just want to say real quick, that joke pays off at the end of the movie as well, because...
Oh, that's right. He's talking about the little old lady from Leningrad.
Yeah, and I'm like, and that's also a great reference to past Star Trek, as well as tying into that joke from earlier in the movie. So I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, no, it was... and then you see him, like, once the rubber hits the road, like, once they're attacked, you know, he just flips into command mode, and he's just, like, all about saving my crew, all about, like, and he makes a lot of good choices. Like, there's nothing really of him being like, oh, no, if I only I'd raise the shields, or, like, he doesn't lament it. He, you know, because they're in a pretty bad situation. Like, they're cut off. They're in the middle of this crazy nebula, you know, this, like, the mudslinging nebula, whatever you want to call it, but, the crew's been taken, the Enterprise is gone, like, you know, it's
gone-ish,
you know, it's in, like, five pieces now, like, a toddler got to it, and it's no longer mint, but, yeah, no, but anyway, I really like it, and then, you know, it bookends at the end, where you have, him talking to Admiral Paris about the Expanse and where
Commodore
they're
going. Paris,
no, wait, sorry, not the Expanse. Commodore Paris, and that he's ready to go back once they finish building him a new ship.
That's right.
And one wasn't magically there. They actually had to build it.
Fast forward, it was there in like a minute, but
well,
you know.
Yes, of course. I want to just say how much I appreciated that.
Well, that's true. That was nice.
Not only do I appreciate it because of how obnoxious it is that Starfleet ships, they just happen to be around whenever you need an extra one. But I liked it because in terms of like the world building and stuff, like we actually got to see a ship built. And that was actually kind of really interesting to me. I saw when they put the neck down and all that sort of stuff. That was
it looked
really,
almost
cool.
Like it was designed to separate and reattach. Like it had like a little bit of an Enterprise D top to the star drive section, and then they added the saucer to it.
Well, an actual significant, not super significant, but a minor plot point in this movie is saucer separation, which I had completely forgotten about, and I thought that was a really cool
point.
And
the vulnerability of the neck.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, we're definitely going to get in focus on the ships, but yeah, for Kirk, this is sort of a bit of a criticism, but not really of this movie. But, like, I think, you know, when you compare Kirk from 09 and Into Darkness, it's usually not my favorite because he just seems to come off as a frat boy. Obviously, he's a different character in this movie, though I almost think too much of a different character because, like, in 3 years, but I guess he can grow a lot in 3 years. But anyway, because he was so excited in Into Darkness, we're going to get that 5-year mission. Spock is going to be awesome, cool. And, you know, he put a hole in a 6-pack and drank it. But anyway, but like in this one, you know, he's all like, oh, 3 years. Oh, man, what are we doing out here? And so, you know, and I make fun of that, but it's like, that's a really different, it's like quite a 3-year difference. But it's not like it's been like where you said, Darren, like Pike, where it was a lot of violence that he's coming off of, you know, this whole thing. You know, if that had been it, you can understand, but this is just sort of like, ugh, that's so boring.
And it wasn't just him. I mean, I know we'll get to the other characters later, but like, there's a ton of McCoy and Spock in this one where they're really growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, I was thinking, Philip, I kind of agree with you, and a little bit of a disagreement. Like, I do agree. I think that the fatigue and like he's just kind of over this life feels like it's too quick in his career for that to be a thing. But on the other hand, like what Darren was saying earlier, I think this is by far the best version of Kirk we get in the Kelvin movies. Like, because he is, like, in 09, obviously, he's young and brash and he's headstrong and dope. But in Into Darkness, he's, you know, whatever, Into Darkness. But in this one, he's just commanding and like, respectful and, like, he's just a good captain. Like, he's dealing with these internal struggles, but it's not to the point where it's like to somebody else's detriment or anything like that, and he's obviously willing to sacrifice whatever it takes to get the crew back. So I think this is like the best, like the peak version that we've seen of that Kirk.
Because I mean, even the stuff that's very Kirky in the prime sense, and maybe could even come off dopey in the script, I think again shows his good qualities. The whole hiding the artifact.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but then not only hiding it, then pretending it's still on the ship.
And pretending it's still in the box. Yeah.
Yeah. But even after that, when he had the, I forget her name, the other alien, who they brought back to the saucer, pretending it's still in the ship.
Yeah.
And then
they did it just so she would make the transmission.
Right.
And then they could track the transmission easier than they could track where their people were. And I'm like, oh, man, here's the thing. Your characters make smart decisions. We like watching that, you know, instead of just plot decisions.
I mean, again, I think, and again, beyond the scope of this movie, but I think a critique of the J.J. Kirk has been, like, we don't see him being a captain sitting in the chair. But again, I guess that Kirk is not supposed to be, you know, he's the one who's out there on the landing party. He doesn't, but anyway. So it's like, oh, he'll be a captain in the ship. Oh, the ship exploded. So never mind. But I do really enjoy Kirk. And then I guess at the end of it, we sort of get the... almost a generations Kirk of like, oh yes, I want to sit back in the chair and don't promote me. So Joel, what do you think is sort of the ending of that journey of Kirk at the end of this? He's ready to finish those 2 years.
Because that's what's also kind of weird about, like, in Beyond, is Beyond supposed to be as if this was the series? You know, like, because they're like 3 years into the 5 year mission. Is this the 5 year mission that we see in TOS? Because it's so different that it's weird. And maybe that's why, like I said, it feels like a grand episode. But maybe.
I assume it's not coincidence. So it's almost supposed to be like the end of TOS. So the end of the third series. So, you know, is the series going to end here in the third year, you know, and beyond? And then it's like, oh, no, we're going to keep on doing it. So, I mean, I assume that.
Did they know that they were pretty much done with this one? Because it kind of feels like that, but I don't know.
Contracts and all that, and you never know, and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah.
But anyway, all right, well, we can move on. So, Spock, you know, you're a big Spock guy, Daniel. What'd you think of this Spock's journey and beyond?
The scene, okay, specifically the scene where McCoy and Spock, I talk about Ambassador Spock, they call him, although we call him Prime Spock.
Right.
His death, and where he cries and he laughs. And
then Kirk's like, McCoy's like, dear God, man, you're delusional.
I love it. I really do. Yeah. I love seeing a different version of Spock, a more human version of Spock, because he's always been mostly Vulcan, and this version's just different because he's had a different set of experiences, and I really like it. And I like Spock's journey overall. Again, I can see, and his arc obviously has to do with the passing of Leonard Nimoy, but it kind of fits so well in the rest of the plot and with what Kirk's going through as well. Although I think Spock's journey fits and works a little bit better than Kirk's does. It doesn't feel as out of place. I really, really like it a lot, and I just get the sense from this Spock that he is a little bit more centered than Prime Spock is. He's a little bit more in tune with both sides of his heritage. He has a girlfriend, even if he's a bit creepy with her.
Your girlfriend radioactive jewelry. Your girlfriend a tracking device.
But honestly, all of the Spock and McCoy stuff is gold. I mean, Spock and McCoy have always been gold, and they've always been great. But it's good that they tapped into that, because it's such a good relationship between those two characters.
Hey, Spock, what's your favorite color?
It's good stuff. So I mean, that's probably the stuff that lands best for me. There's lots of character stuff in the movie. That is probably at the top of the game for me.
All right, Darren. We've seen so many Spocks at this time. We've had Ethan Spock. We have Leonard Spock.
Yeah.
We have Zach Spock. So
with Spock, Baby Spock. Baby Spock. And, you know, I think I agree with what you're saying about he's more centered. And for anyone who would say, oh, yeah, like Spock wouldn't cry, or oh, Spock wouldn't. It's like, yeah, but our Prime Spock never had to deal with his future self coming back and dying. Like this is a totally new
and his
event.
Home planet exploding in front of him. His mom dying in his arms.
And like looking at his, for me, it's like when he looks at the, you know, the obituary or whatever of Spock, and I had to wind it and look at it again. Cause I'm like, wait, that looks wrong. And then I'm like, no, it says he's 30 years old.
I know
it's like star date to star date.
I didn't think about that too.
I'm like, wait a minute. And I'm like, oh, you time travel stick, you know. But yeah, so he basically, you know, because Zachary Quinto Spock, you know, is 30-ish years old. But it was like, that's got to be weird. Like, yeah, this guy technically from Stardate to Stardate. But yeah, no, Spock was great. And I think, I mean, they are so smart. They're like, let's pair up Spock with Bones the whole way. And that just was what you needed to do, because otherwise, and what that let is that let Sulu like move up on the bridge. That let, you know, actually, you know, the more I think about it, this has a real Star Trek IV feel where everybody splits up and does their own things. Like, I didn't even think of it till now, but yeah, you have Bones and Spock. You have, you know, Chekhov and Kirk, which is a great pairing.
It is.
And then you had, you know, Sulu and the Captees with Uhura. You know, Sulu being like, hey, don't forget, I actually wear yellow. I am in the command program. Like, I can sit in the center chair and I can lead. You know, he is the ranking officer, you know, of the captives. And it was just, I like that. I like that dynamic that they rolled with. But yeah, but overall, Spock was great. And again, maybe because I've seen it before, maybe because it felt not predictable, but it just felt fitting. Like in the very end in the turbo lift where he's like, oh, is that what you wanted to talk about earlier? And we know it's like he's wanting to say he's going to resign. And he's like, more or less. I'm like, he's going to say more or less. And he's like, more or less. He's like, yeah, because you can't lie, but you're not going to say no. But no, yeah, Zachary Quinto, I mean, he did a great job as Spock. And I think there was just enough Spock. Sometimes there's too much Spock, and I think there was just enough in this movie.
You know, say one thing that just quickly about it wasn't distracting, but I guess enough for me to comment on it. And I don't know if it's just this movie or all three of them, but I noticed it this much. Like, his hair and makeup is just a little off for me.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it wasn't just me. All right.
No, it's always like too perfect. Like even like Prime Spock in TOS was not that. If bowl cutty, like it just feels so perfect. But
and they make him a little more too white, because I mean theoretically he's supposed to be a little more green. So I, you know, anyway. But anyway, you're gonna say Daniel.
I was just gonna say, I love the fact that you get all this wonderful Spock McCoy relationship, and you think it's over. They get back to the Franklin and stuff, and then. And then oh, yeah. Spock is the one that suggests that McCoy goes with
well,
him.
Well, maybe someone who has experience in these crafts should go with me. And Kirk totally knows. He's like, I can't believe you're doing that to him. Yeah.
And it's great because you get like a whole second half of them together. So it's like way more than you expected. It's funny.
Well, and then especially like it's the little lines where Scotty's all like, oh, yes, it was made for cargo only. But who knew it? Like a three twists of the knob and now it works with living beings. It's like, oh yeah, that's good. We didn't want to, you know, in case we spliced you together.
Oh, that's true. Now that I think, I mean, again, that's a whole, but well, whatever, who cares? But I was just thinking about it, because the NX-01 is after the Franklin, right? Because that's a warp 5 ship. The Franklin's a warp 4 ship.
Yep.
And the transporter was almost experimental on the NX-01 with yep. one pad. Now we're doing 20 people, and anyway, doesn't matter. So anyway, so let's talk about the almost the main character. You know, helps if you write the script, Scotty. Darren, what do you think about Scotty's adventure?
Oh, Scotty
solo
was
adventure.
Great. Yeah. Well, you know, from shooting himself out of a torpedo tube, and using his iPad to fly himself down, like that's Scotty right there. To even when he was rerouting stuff and he was kind of in like a little cylindrical room, and I'm like, that's basically Jeffrey's tube Scotty, you know, getting stuff ready. And again, I liked him a lot better in this one than in previous ones where he like had no confidence and he was being, you know, marginalized by Kirk. And like, no, we want Scotty. Like, Scotty's really good. And he pairing up with again, he had the pairs, and him pairing up with J-Lo, great new character. And, you know, she's smart and capable, and she knows, but she also, we have the reasoning behind that, because we have her spending time and learning from her house, the Franklin, and which is an awesome little design ship. But no, I liked Scotty, and I think, I mean, maybe that's just the overall of all these characters. They were just all balanced and used very well. And that's very difficult in a Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say even there's even a lot of the next-gen movies don't balance the whole cast as well because it becomes too top-heavy on, like, you know, Picard and Data. Yeah. But this, you know, everybody had stuff to do.
Hmm. So any thoughts on Scotty Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, it's all good stuff, and I'm just going to keep saying the same thing that Darren's saying. It's good, really good pairing with J-Lo. It's all fantastic, and like you said, Philip, it helps when you write the script. But no, I like Simon Pegg's version of Scotty. He's funny and silly, and but when I really just think he has a really deep love of Star Trek, and I think it kind of shows in what he wrote and kind of how he plays the character as well. So I did. It's, and what you were just saying about balance, it's amazing to me, and I hadn't thought of it until now. But it's sometimes when they do these split up things, you're kind of bored. You know, there's one or two that you don't mind skipping. It's like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing this now. But at no point, none of these characters, none of these situations felt like I was like, okay, let's get back to the other guys now. I was always invested in the situation. So.
No, I think you're right. And I mean, like Jayla, again, introducing her and that. And even, I would say, that would so be easy to feel for, like, Sulu and Uhura, because theirs is really the villain moments because they're with the bad guys. But even then, like I said, you're seeing Sulu in a command role, and you're seeing Uhura, which the payoff later of recognizing the villain. And they're all, you know, it's just really well balanced, you know, and that works really, really well. But yeah, I was just thinking the other thing I like is I like that all the actors are older. Like somehow Kirk, like Chris Pine and
the hair a little bit,
you know, and Scotty, like everyone's older and they feel more mature, like they've been doing their job. And I liked that. It felt, it had some agency to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, I mean, before we get to the villain and the plot, yeah, this is sort of the other character's grab bag hour. So, Sulu, McCoy, we talked about Uhura, Chekhov, Jayla. One thing about Jayla, again, I agree. I admit, I did watch this late at night, so I was trying not to, may have been some snoozing, but there was a part at the end, or three-fourths of the movie, or nine-tenths of the movie, when she kills, or is fighting with the, you know, so number one.
The lieutenant bad guy.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, yes, I'll kill you just like I killed your father. I'm like, wait, where did that cut? Did I miss something about?
So remember when she doesn't reveal that she knows where the bad guy camp is because she knows that they'll ask her to go there? And she's like, no, they would, because apparently the routine is they make people crash on the planet, and then when they need to replenish their life force, they grab them and take them, and then they never come back. So she's like, I've seen my whole family be taken and die. So she doesn't know specifically who killed her father, but she knows that he went into the camp one day and didn't come back.
But
so
I
they
like
did
that guy,
so they did explain
that definitely remembers, you know, her.
Yeah,
you know, that seemed like a little, like, I feel like I missed something there, but anyway, other than that, it was all good. A lot of she's definitely I don't know, is she going to invent the EMH, because she is a holograph expert. So.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. That'd be cool. Yeah, no, and it's, again, also explaining why the Franklin is hidden. And because they even straight up ask it, how did nobody know where the ship was? It's like, oh, hey, I hid it, you know. And apparently it's built really well because it could shake itself loose of pure rock and take off again. But, yeah, hey. Yeah, they built those a little.
They don't
sturdy.
Make them like they used to.
Look, they built those on Earth back in the day, and then launched them into space. So.
Oh, I mean, you can't go very fast.
I cannot believe that they actually addressed the entire controversy about the Enterprise being built on land in the thing. I was.
There's
so
a reason it's called a starship.
Yeah, yeah, it's supposed to be in space.
It's actually a starship class. That's what the plaque said. It's kind of amazing, but yeah.
But yes, any other final thoughts about the other main Starfleeters before moving on?
I would say even, again, this was robbed of the makeup Academy Award.
Oh,
it
yeah.
did not get it. I believe it went to Suicide Squad this year. And you look at this, that, I mean, the one they kept promoting was the giant coral, like, mollusk.
Chekhov's
date. Yeah. And you're like, this looks amazing. And it's, but just overall, like, the makeup was really on point. You had, like, you know, Jayla, you had Crabhead Lady, and, you know,
R.I.P.
But just a lot of great, great characters, and it felt, although I did, it was interesting, if you guys felt the same way, the first time they went onto the bridge, it felt a little cheap. Honestly, I feel the Discovery Bridge has topped it, and, like, you know, because they had the big glass panels, and I'm like, those are just acrylic panels. They don't actually do anything. They're just, oh, look, boop, 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 you know. It, honestly,
well, they were going to trash it, you know, so why invest?
Yeah, but, I mean, like, the Discovery Bridge felt more advanced than the movie Enterprise Bridge. That just was a weird feeling, because I hadn't seen this since Discovery had come out. So,
all right. So, if no final thoughts, let's get, or you know that. So, let's talk about the villain, depending on what you want to call him. But Krall, I guess, or Krall.
I wouldn't say sympathetic. He is a villain.
Yeah. So, what are your thoughts about, you know? Because, you know, let's see, we've had, let's go through it. So, we had Nero in 09. We had Khan in Into Darkness, and so we can, you know, talk about how deep or not deep those villains are. But now we have Krall. So, Darren, did you think it was a little more of a course correction or more of the same? Or,
you know, it's a good villain. I like that it was a new villain. You know, that was nice. You know, something we hadn't seen.
The Kelvinverse does not cast Americans for its villains. So I think it's very interesting.
That's true. But I guess I would say the weakest part was I felt we didn't really spend enough time with him. Like, we kind of know his motivation, I guess, because they had to spend so much we lost out because they wanted to do the twist reveal. I think if we didn't have the twist reveal, and I think you could even done the twist reveal, but maybe like he's like a helmeted figure, so he looks human the whole time, but we just don't see his face or something. But you know, I felt like half the time we were spent with him was misdirecting or trying to get a setup for this twist, and that was time taken away from his motivation. And it was just, it was all back heavy. Like, we learn all that really quickly at the end, and it's not, I mean, that's not terrible, but I guess it would have been, I don't know. I think it was the weakest part, was just the way we were dished out the villain. I'm not saying he was a bad villain. I'm just saying it could have been better.
Well, if he was not a bad villain, he'd be a hero. So, Daniel, do you agree it was a too late of a villain explanation or whatever?
So, I have a lot of thoughts. This feels like people criticize, especially the earlier Marvel films, for villain of the week sort of syndrome. Yeah. And that's what this
surprise,
is.
Surprise, he dies at the end. You know.
That's what this is. And it's by far the weakest part of the story and the entire movie, I think. On the other hand, I think it's awesome that they base his entire history roughly pre-Enterprise era stuff. Because that's really
cool. They say Mako.
Well, it's post-Enterprise, but yes.
Yeah,
No. The Franklin is pre-Enterprise.
Yes, but his history is post-Enterprise.
His history, well, spans Enterprise, I would say, because they say that he served in both the Zindi and the Romulan Wars.
That's true.
So, well, I suppose it depends if you say the Enterprise ended 10 years after, then I guess.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I really like that stuff. I really like that world. And, like, the uniforms are all from Enterprise. Like, I love that building straight from the show. I think that's great. I don't know if they felt they needed to try to top the catastrophe that was Khan and Into Darkness, but the movie is totally not serviced by the fact that they tried to make this twist, and it's because it's not clever. It's in no way interesting.
We're told he's a smart villain. We're not shown he's a smart villain.
Yeah, and it's like, if
I mean, he's violent, but it's not smart necessarily.
Yeah.
Well, but they talk about him tapping into the logs and monitoring it, but we don't see any of that, so he's not threatening.
Yeah, he's more confusing than anything, because he's just like, wait a minute, you're just sucking people's life energy. How did you do that?
Yeah, they really underplay that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, because I remember after the first time I watched the movie, I didn't understand how that happened. And now that I've watched it the second time, I was looking out for that. I was like, oh, he... I guess they left all these ships behind and this amazing life-sucking technology behind? What?
And the secret weapon that we just got to get the key for. Who are these people? Like, they're...
I don't understand. Oh, God. The MacGuffin was also terrible. Like, this tiny disc has these micro...
Yeah.
Bio... Yeah, that was the only... well, not the only, but one of the only, like, big things. It was like, because I was trying to figure out, again, it's only the second time I've seen this. It's quite a coincidence that the Enterprise has that artifact, and the Enterprise then sent to the planet. Now,
that's true.
I know when the line said that, oh, he's been monitoring subspace traffic, okay, I guess that makes sense. He knew maybe that they had it.
Well, no, he did know, because when we zoom in on the vault, and they've logged it, and then we get the glitch... Like,
oh,
that's the glitch.
I don't think I noticed that.
That represents him hacking the system. So there was that. But you wouldn't know to look for that until three quarters of the movie. But okay. Yes, there was that.
Yeah, the whole twist is poorly. It's just a poor twist, and it's poorly done.
It's like, calm down, M. Night. We don't need it.
Yeah, I wonder.
To do that. That's all.
And I know it's second guessing, but like, you know, having seen it once, and I was watching it on my TV, which is not, you know, the smallest or biggest thing in the world, but
I had to switch my TV to cinema mode because it was dark. I could barely see anything, and I'm like, make it brighter.
Well, I was trying to see the uniform Crawl was wearing, because I was trying to figure out there's a logo on the side, and I'm like, oh, maybe it's an old Mako uniform and they're teasing us, but I couldn't read it, or I couldn't see it, because it was definitely some kind of logo. I couldn't tell if there was
that
writing.
Little video definitely focused on all the wrong things, because it was like,
Yeah, and I think maybe, and again, I don't know how you know, depends how you want to treat your audience. If there maybe been one or two drip drops, you know, oh, he says something, or you see a Starfleet logo in the villain ship, or just something that you're kind of like, oh, that's, and then it comes together at the end, instead of, like you said, the sort of last minute, like, and here's the whole explanation for him. I'm like, oh, well, it's a little late, but okay.
I mean, even, I don't know, like.
And also, it would have been cooler to me. And I guess it serves the purpose of, like, oh, he doesn't turn human until he crashes, so then he can blend into the Yorktown. And I guess that's... But to me, I almost wish he was been human a little bit earlier. But anyway.
Yeah, I just... Again...
He wouldn't talk like this.
Well, he's an interesting villain, but yet maybe it's just the fact that the whole, like, I'm part of Starfleet, but I'm a bad guy... I'm kind of done with, like,
the evil
captain. Can our villain just come from outside? Like, you know, yeah, it's
his whole crusade. The thing about this movie, it's got a really good idea underneath it, but the actual conflict of the plot is not super subtle. So his idea of, like, we're the frontier pushing back. It's like, it's like, okay, man, like. Just chill out, you know, whatever.
But I mean, he's a terrorist, obviously, but it's like, because he crashed, right? Let me see if I follow this. His ship crashed, and because he didn't get rescued, the Federation deserves to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Is that the whole thing?
And this was the Federation of 100 years ago. So, like, all those people are dead. You know, this is a totally different, you know.
And because he's also a soldier, so he's angsty that nobody rescued him. I guess,
like, if it had just been Starfleet, human only, that would have been all right. Like, I don't see what the diversity of the, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a thing. It's just kind of
like that would have been interesting if he had gone the whole xenophobic route. That, like, if he had kind of continued that from, like, the Zindi arc, and he.
But
and
he's alien,
was,
though, so it's going to be a
no,
really
but,
twisted
keep
philosophy.
Him, no, keep him human.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep him human using the suit technology. You know, but he's, like, addicted to it. He can't take it off now because or he'll die. But, like, that would be kind of interesting where he's bringing that backwards mentality of xenophobia and trying to bring that into the Federation. So now he's got a big issue with Spock. He's, you know, That I think that would have been way more interesting because that was a great arc of Enterprise.
He could be Terra Firma or whatever.
That's what I was thinking when he.
If he was part of Terra Prime,
when he mentioned that's what he's like. Unity is a problem. Like that's what I was thinking was entirely that Enterprise.
That would have
arc.
Been way more interesting. And like if the reason he was destroying was it Livingston.
Yorktown.
It looks like a fish bowl, guys. I was a little confused.
That's true.
Yeah, like the reason he's destroying Yorktown is not so much that they pushed out so far, but because it's all these different species living together. Like he hates that. Like that would have been way more interesting.
And here's the thing. Okay, I have a question. Like you were talking about trying to get a timeline down, Philip. He crashes
timeline. Daniel, there's no time to worry about the time.
He crashes. He says there's only three crew members left.
Yeah. Right? It's him, the lieutenant, and the girl. I'm assuming that's the three.
So whatever technology that the whatever race left behind on that planet turns each individual into a different species?
I'm guessing depending on what species you suck up.
Yeah.
No.
That's why he was turning human, because he was sucking up the Starfleet people.
He was sucking up the Starfleet people at the end to turn him more human. Again, you have to make a leap, because it's not explained at all, but...
Okay.
That was my assumption, too.
I guess I can go along with that. Okay. I didn't realize that's what was happening.
Why he changed that first time and looked a little less whatever he did.
Sucking up the... Yeah, which reminded me of that Enterprise episode where they're in, computer and stuff.
Yeah, I would say this, it's not crazy violent, but this movie is a little more violent because you have those two people hanging down and getting sucked life force to death.
Well, and there's the dead crewman McCoy comes across. Well, and that's true. Like, think about this. Like, McCoy, that went nowhere. Like, McCoy scans the guy, and he, tries to help him for a moment, but there should have been a moment where McCoy helped put two and two together. But if I remember, McCoy said jack about the staying alive.
Because if you really want to get deep down, so their weapon, steals life force, and then, they just, have a little thing, and then they take that cartridge home and plug it in the machine. I mean, is that...
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the twist. If you don't have the twist, and he doesn't have to be an actual member from the Mako days, then you don't need the life-stealing force. You don't need the... He's just a guy with an armada that's just... It's more like the Voyager episodes where they're in that little expanse where they prey on anyone who wanders in. Like that, and it's just keep it simple. Didn't keep it simple enough.
It's a bit almost Nero-y and we crashed, like you said, three people left, and the people left over had this drone force. I'm like, the drone force of approximately a billion ships?
That part was also super eye-rolly. Like, because you would be able... Why would you leave that behind, man? Like, you can take over anything you want with that. Like, you don't just leave that stuff behind. They take over the Yorktown with that ginormous fleet. That's ridiculous. Like,
How did he recruit his army? Because they're, have to have a billion people to fly a billion ships.
Well, also remember... Well, no, he didn't have to fly a billion ships. They were all, kind of controlled from his ship.
But then, they would crash, and they would have people inside that would then board.
Every ship that we saw had people in them, man.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they established that the majority of them were all drone and were controlled by the frequency. That's why they jammed the frequency.
It's not clear because every time that they board a ship and every time that
someone
they show
out.
A ship, there's someone.
I did like
of
the moment where he said, that they let the transmission go out of the distress call so that the forces from Yorktown would fly away, and then it would leave it more vulnerable to attack.
Yeah. I just thought that there was definitely a swarm theme, because I'm trying to remember. There was... when they first landed on the planet, I've only seen it twice at this point, there was some alien species, a bunch of pink things that were a swarm. I was like, is everything in this movie a swarm? Because then you had the ships that were a swarm, and then, anyway. Because it was just a billion ships. I just thought it was a little much.
I don't really understand how torpedoes wouldn't be effective against them, though. Because
they go,
if you just detonated them in the middle of that swarm, you're going to kill a whole bunch. But the torpedoes just kind of sailed on by. They were just
Choo-choo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little And so let's get into kind of the look, because that's what we're kind of going into. So how about the look? So we have, you know, the destruction of the Enterprise. We have the Kelvin. We have whatever else you want to talk about, sort of cinematography-wise and effects and all that. You know, kind of a quote-unquote new transporter effect than we've seen previously.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to grab this part of you, then this part of you, then this part of you. It's like, that looks like it hurts.
So, yeah, any notable... Now, Daniel, you know, we lost those nacelles.
You know, in the first half of this movie, there is a lot of really good starship shots.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of good stuff. Especially
like them flying at warp in the warp bubble.
God, the warp bubble. I'll never get over the warp bubble. That's the best interpretation of warp that we've seen so far. But it's also, it's not just that. It's all this, the camera.
If there's something not wrong with the universe, there must something be wrong with me. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
There's like the camera is constantly going from inside to outside the ship. It's a lot of forced perspective. There's that one shot where you're basically sitting, I guess, on top of the deflector shield or maybe
yeah, facing
that's
facing back.
A weird shot for me. You just see torpedo tube and two dots and I'm like, what? Oh, that's the nacelles. Yeah. That's right.
It's when they're launching out of the
It's cool because it's establishing a scale of the ship, and that's what's really cool. And of course, we get this stuff later, which is a little different than that, but like when Chekhov and Kirk like literally jump out the front window and we get to actually see two people literally travel down the entire saucer section.
There's lots of windows. There's lots of things to help get scale.
It's really, I really, really appreciated that for that reason. There's a lot of really cool starship shots that we don't get normally. So I really like that.
I do have to admit, I mean, this is just a preference thing. I don't feel that strong, but I don't like the nacelle placement. Now, I don't think I noticed it that much, but in this movie, I notice how straight up almost the nacelles are, and I'm like, oh my god, that's so ugly.
Well, it's because they make the neck so long, so the saucer's so high, so if you want the nacelles peeking over the top of the saucer, you have to make them really high.
But on the A, I noticed they angled them. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
that wasn't
a They're angled a lot, yeah. Yeah, because otherwise they're kind of like, whoop, like teardrop. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, Daniel, I know I was thinking of you again, watching the Yorktown, and are you going to think more Halo or more Mass Effect with the Yorktown?
The gravity stuff was a bit much, I think. It feels almost poorly designed.
Well, I just think of the way the cities were,
no,
like...
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, definitely. Yeah, that's more of a Mass Effect thing. That's basically the Citadel from Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. Except the gravity's weird. The gravity, I just think like, I get it for a set piece, so you can have the glass traveling down a path and then somebody follows it. But it's like, this seems super dumb. Like, I don't know how that would
like,
work.
Well, think about it. You would probably have more surface area if you just Dyson sphered it and had everyone live on the inside than the crazy, you know, Rubik's, or was it like MC Escher type, you know, loops on the inside. I mean, again, it looks... I mean, obviously it was built for looks because it looks amazing.
It's cool. It is
like,
cool looking.
It's like, okay, guys, so you have Mushroom or Snow Globe. You know, those are your two designs.
Well, they did say Snow Globe, right? Didn't they?
Yep. Snow Globe.
Yeah, well, it was funny because I thought to myself, are there like, you know, have we established that there have to be, whenever you do a Kelvinverse movie, you have to do like at least three things, and one of them has to be Kirk shooting out of something... So because the whole movie, I was like, okay, and then like, right, you said at the end with the gravity, and I'm like, oh, he's gonna again, like the third time, you know, he jumps into gravity. Now Kirk swooving, like we had it in the mine thing in 2009. We had getting launched
the torpedo
into darkness, and now so we gotta always have crisp, or you always have a Kirk shooting somewhere.
Well, and I also liked the little scenes. We had two of them where, you know, like the people who are running the starbase, and they're like, you know, actually identifying ships that are coming in, and actually, it's like, this is great. You know, I don't remember the name of that
security.
Actor, but I know.
You don't have to get that.
Yeah, the alien guy sitting like, hey, they've not responded to our hail. Should we do something? Yeah, yeah. Like, good job, bud.
Red alert.
You're doing your job. Well, yeah. And as soon as like they're attacking that first outer wave, they don't go, I wonder if it's hostile or not. No. It shields up, right? Well, maybe not shields, because I don't think that thing has shields.
Yeah, snow globe. Yeah.
But no, just lots of great things. Oh, what did you guys think of the bike? I know that was a big controversy back. I don't really care.
I don't think I had a problem. I mean,
in the age of Budweiser Classic, I don't really care about the motorcycle.
So, okay, there's two super cheesy things in this movie. One works.
Are they music related?
And one doesn't work for me. The bike is a little. I don't want to say it's too cheesy because it's not. I wouldn't even say it's as cheesy as the music, which does work for me. I love the music scene.
Oh, the beats and shouting.
Yes, it's like
them. Is this okay? Yeah, the is this classical music is like the best line
I believe
of the
so,
whole
doctor.
Movie. I believe so because it's like wait. And then you think about it. Oh yeah, to them, 200 years in the future, this is classical. Oh my gosh,
it's that scene shouldn't work. It doesn't work on paper. It works in the context of the movie. It's really fun and like the visual of that ship, like the wave.
It's the climax of the movie.
It's
awesome.
So cool. That's so much fun. I think you're supposed to get a similar kind of feeling with the bike. I don't. I think the bike is lame and super boring, and it's like, I don't need a motorcycle. Come on, man. Like, whatever. But it's not so distracting that it takes me out of
the
movie.
I mean, it's a cool sequence.
Yeah,
but...
yeah, it's fine. It's fine, but I just, whatever. There's 18 other ways they could have done that. But, like, and by the way, the build-up, not only is the scene with the music fantastic, but the build-up with the teamwork... Everybody on that crew is working together to try to figure out that problem. Everybody on that team contributes something to that thing. That is, like, I really felt that was my favorite part of the movie. Like a real Star Trek camaraderie, like a real crew. That was awesome. Everybody did something cool. I really loved that.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, and then this, of course, not knowing, I suppose, at the end, that this. Is the final Kelvin movie. You know, I mean, there's unless a miracle happens in the next decade, you know, this is going to be it until whatever we do next. But, you know,
I think we'll have more Star Trek movies. It's,
yeah,
will Kelvin they be with this crew, with these actors, I guess.
Yeah, no. So, you know, and I for whatever reason, and I don't know the actual numbers, but this was considered not well box office. Because obviously there's not a fourth one. That's usually the clue. Other than contracts and stuff. But
didn't they like really poorly market it? I can't remember.
Well, I mean, in my thoughts is that because it was so in my mind last minute, and there's probably smarter people that can talk about this. I mean, the name, like it's like we had a name, a date, but no script, and so it's like Star Trek Beyond, of course, is a dumb name because it doesn't tell me anything, you know. Beyond what, you know, but I mean, like I feel like we still have to submit a new title for this movie, you know, because it's, you know, it's just a placeholder. It's Deep Space Nine, basically. It's Star Trek Picard, you know, we don't have no idea. It's just going to be it's a Star Trek movie. But, you know, sort of what do y'all think with Beyond, this being the final chapter, sort of the legacy of JJ and Kelvin movies?
I mean, I'd say overall it, you know, I like it. I like it on par with those seven. I think I like them for different reasons, and like I'll watch them for different reasons. Like as far as deciding which one to put in, because I won't put in the middle one.
so there's a 50-50 chance.
you're saying there's a chance. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think overall, like, you know, I mean, especially after us talking about all those ins and out points, like for overall, it gets way more right than it ever gets wrong. You know, it's a pretty solid movie, and I think if we had this solidarity, like, across all three, I think we'd be in a much better shape, you know. And, you know, do I think it's enough to justify a fourth film? I think at this point it's been so long, it's kind of hard, like, we've kind of moved on from that. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to roll the dice again, you know, if we're going to get something this good or if we're going to get another Into Darkness, you know. But no, overall, I like Star Trek Beyond. I bought it, you know, I enjoy watching it when I'm not forced to by my co-hosts, you know, it's good.
And Daniel, what are your thoughts about Beyond and the Kelvin version?
Yeah,
JJ
I'm curious
Legacy.
Your guys' thoughts, especially having not seen it again since theatrical.
So I did enjoy my time watching the movie. There were some frustrating parts, but whatever, that's fine. I think in terms of a finale, I know for a long time there was rumored to be this idea of them closing the loop. The loop opened when Spock came through, and they wanted to just close.
He was the first to arrive.
Yeah. So they wanted to just close the loop. They wanted to, I guess, which is kind of a horrific kind of concept if you think about it, but basically the cessation of this entire universe to exist. That would be interesting. And if they actually go that route for a fourth film in this possible future, that would be neat. It'd be interesting to see. Other than that, I'm fine with this as a finale, as a kind of a one-off. I guess it wouldn't be a one-off. It'd be a three-off. interesting look into an alternate dimension, which Star Trek has done many, many, many times before. And it goes on in a high point, I think. I love 09, even though I know it's flawed. Into Darkness was kind of a disaster. And then Beyond is the most Star Trek-y thing in this universe. Like, it feels very, very close to what I would consider really good Star Trek. And so if you're going to go out on that note, I'm totally fine with that. I don't have a burning desire to see these characters again. It's not like I have a insatiable need to see what happens. But if they want it, so if they leave it here, I'm fine. And if they find a really good, interesting story to close it out, I'm good with that too. But like you said, Darren, it may not be worth rolling the dice for another Into Darkness or something like that that we don't need to see. So, I'm good with Beyond being the close of that universe.
I mean, I still think having it be a parallel universe is the smartest move they made right out of the gate, of saying everything you did is still exists. We're just going to sidestep and tell this story with these actors. I mean, I think that dodged so many problems that they could have had. I think doing that was good. And, you know, if we get more movies, you know, most likely they're going to include actors from the TV series now, especially after the merger. I don't see why not. So, you know, it's going to be interesting.
And maybe in, you know, a decade, the prices will be lower and we can do J.J. Star Trek the Motion Picture. So, there you go.
Who knows? Maybe we'll get Kelvin-verse Short Treks.
That would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Crazier things have happened, so who knows?
I would even settle for a, like, Parallels Multiverse episode that brings in
Crisis.
Like,
on Infinite, like, Streks.
Yeah. I honestly, if they had the gall to go for it and actually bring in, I would be just like, remember with the Klingons in Discovery where we said, like, all they needed to do when they had, like, the High Council was have some look like TOS, some look like TNG,
and some look like
from Discovery, and you're good. Like, honestly, if that's all they did, I would buy it. I would go with it.
Hey, Endgame is the number one movie ever. So it's possible that all these crossover crazy ideas that we have could become a reality if the powers that be are just looking at the numbers.
For a second, I thought you meant Voyager Endgame, and I'm like, really? Okay.
Now I'm just imagining, like, an aged makeup Chris Pine just saying, no, I don't think I will.
And... Kirk, we need you to come back. No, I don't think I will.
And he passes on his hairpiece to someone else. but Beyond was a positive experience, so I... You know, may come to it every. It's one of those things, because I think, you know, regardless of the negative things about Kelvin, watching Beyond, like, even when the title sequence came up and that music started playing, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. You know, this is gonna be
it's
good
the
stuff.
Most TOS TV series ish movie, really. Mm-hmm. Like, even though it's not the same actors playing it, like, it feels like a big episode, mm-hmm. and it's fun and it's campy at times, and there was even moments, I'm trying to think now, where the music was like real campy,
Oh, yeah.
Am I remembering that right?
Oh, definitely.
Where it's all of a sudden like, but like I can't, like a reaction moment from, you know, Bones or something like that. Like maybe not full 70s or 60s, but it was like, it was there.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Darren, if people want to talk to you about how they can make their own holographic projectors, where can people find you?
They could find me on Twitch, or Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi.
And Daniel, if people want to know if you prefer TurboLift, Escape Pod, or Torpedo Tube, where can they find you of how to leave your ship?
Or secondary hole section.
It is amazing that the turbo lift can exist in the vacuum. They can find me on Twitter at @oneupdan. That's the number one, not the word.
And if folks want to talk to me about how I write my own scripts to star in my own movies, they can find me at NC Public Servant. Well, until next week, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3 and beyond.